Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for our fourth weekly show presented to you by Join Cycling. This is the last, well, not the last one we're doing, but this is the last solitary weekly show. A lot of you have been saying, where are the daily recaps? They're coming back. Don't worry. We've got World Tour racing like Omloop, like UAE Tour coming up this week. We'll be previewing those races in this episode, as well as recapping Algarve, the Andalusia that wasn't, as well as, some other talking points like Alberson de Koenig's double denim kit. Benelux special. But what have you been up to, Benji? I just pulled you out of a race or something.
Just rode a Zwift race, but wasn't the best Zwift race in the first place, so I thank you for pulling me out of a Zwift race this time. I needed an excuse to dip out. I'll be honest about it. I was suffering, but I've enjoyed the week of racing, and I don't know, I expected more races because some of them actually got cancelled, which is unfortunate. But on the other end, the racing that we did got, I enjoyed quite a few races throughout that. But I am craving the classics at this point. I'm craving for Omloop. Yeah, I'm craving for Kuurne as well, which in previous years I wasn't craving Kuurne as much. But this time around, I'm like, bomb, I want it. I want it right now on my plate. I want to eat it. But hey, it's a few days to go, but UAE Tour will be a good taster, I reckon, beforehand.
There might be crosswinds tomorrow, I think, in the UAE Tour. But yeah, I'm keen for some cobble action too. The warm-up races certainly have felt like that. But as I said, this episode is brought to you by Join Cycling. Join Cycling is an adaptive training platform that I've been using to get in shape for our Classics campaign, Benji and I, in the middle of March in Flanders. I'm in the middle of the Classics program. You put in your target event, the target date, and sort of the specifications of the event, and then your availability, all the parameters that you can control, and then Join creates an adaptive training plan for you. So I had a really, really good week of training, my biggest week in probably 5 years, I would say. I did back-to-back 3.5-hour rides, and then even did a really, really good tempo ride yesterday, got to 90 minutes, and then binned it on down. It was really, it's like that, it's in that in-between zone. It's really sunny, but I was coming down Port Caboose, bam, hit some shade, too much brake, and my brakes on the e-bike are set up the wrong way, the Euro way, which is incorrect. And I just grabbed way too much and slid out. But that's fine. End of the ride, Mrs. Rouge had to go pick me up, look down, my joint workout score was still 9 out of 10, so I was like, well, maybe it was meant to be. Crashing.
Question.
There.
Do you also have the issue that you switch between bikes with brakes on the opposite
yes.
end?
Yes.
Me too. It's
fine. I'm going to change it. Because like, I just grabbed way too much. I thought I was going to be feathering back brake a little bit. And yeah. Just mash front brake the wrong side. So that was it. And yeah, I've gone too fast, obviously. And I ain't Tom Pidcock.
You're okay.
We move on just a little. Luckily with winter gear, I'm wearing, you know, it's just my hands and stuff. In case people see those, I thought I'd explain at the outset. But if you want to check out Join Cycling, many of you have, and it's great to see that. And you're already getting on board with the training programs for your training. You can get a special offer for listeners to the LRCP, a 30-day free trial period without even inputting your credit card, as well as then at the end of that free trial period, you get a 6-month subscription offer at a discount via email. For some of you early activators, that'll be coming up shortly, that offer, so make sure you stay tuned for that email. You just need to download the Join Cycling app in the App Store or Play Store and go to join.cc/lanternrouge to begin or to get that offer. So there's no strings attached. Go check it out if you like it, which I'm sure many of you will. Then you can got that free 30-day offer, and you don't have to bin it like me. So I'll be on the trainer this week. I'll say I broke my rear shifter, my right shifter. I just snapped off. That's the worst bit. All right, Enough about me. We can talk about mechanicals now, though. Someone who did see he had a shifting issue, same when he couldn't shift, in Algarve, Mr. Remco Evenepoel this week. He wins GC at Tour of Algarve. He does. He wins the TT, does the business there,
yeah.
Defends, didn't need to win the two GC days, no other issues, that's fine. But then today he got beaten by Martinez again in the sprint. He said he couldn't shift. He did the whole final of the stage in the big ring? Was that what he said?
Yeah, that's what he said after the stage. When he crossed the line, I felt like he was like looking down to his stem and was like feeling whether his front tire was like flat or something.
Yeah.
So I was expecting the sprinter's excuse of, oh, I've got a flat tire in the sprint or something. But then he comes with the explanation of the of being stuck in the big ring. I'll be honest, I haven't checked whether he was stuck in the big ring on the footage or anything, so I can't say if he was or not. What, sorry?
I think he was, but Fabio's taught him well. I mean, to be honest, when you look at the stage Tafoya and Martinez sprint would look, he looked like he was back in that Liège, best on Liège 2022 yep. form. That sprint, it was really, really impressive on Foya. And also today, I'm not sure the gearing would have made too much of a difference. So he wins two stages, second on GC. Van Aert won. He didn't go for the first sprint, went for the third sprint, positioned himself quite well. His TT was a bit lackluster, or not a bit, it was quite lackluster, I would say, his TT. Him and Ganna, really not good TTs, mate, but he said he hasn't been training it, I guess.
Del Toro did better than both of them, so that was really impressive for a rider that I didn't know had a TT. So now we know that he has a TT for the future, so that's going to be curious for the other races as well. His climbing was not at top level compared to the Remcos of the world, but he's still young, so it's curious what type of rider he'll turn into. But about the Martinez Remco sprint, one thing I do want to mention is that I feel like Remco lost the second sprint in the same way he lost the first sprint. As in, if you lose a long sprint against Martinez on Alto de Foya, then I feel like you got to try something differently on Alto de Mayao. And there we see the same exact scenario happen where Martinez once again comes over him in the last bit of that sprint. So I would have either tried to attack earlier or force a closer to the line sprint. Because do you think Martinez beats Remco in the last 200 meter sprint versus the 600 meter one as well?
Yeah, I think so. He just,
I don't know about that.
I think Remco should have... Martinez was too active closing people. In the mid phase of the climb, Martinez closed Scaroni. That was the moment for Remco to counter him and do his... I think Remco was the strongest maybe on the climb overall, and that was the moment. But he didn't need to expose himself like that because, you know, what if he then gets countered and loses GC? So I guess he didn't have as much to lose.
I do have this thing where... whenever Remco loses, he does end up saying something in an interview most of the time where he's like, oh, I lost because of this. And even if it's true, even if it's true that he's in the big ring or that he makes a mistake in the last kilometer that otherwise he would have won, I would enjoy seeing that humility of like saying, fair play, Martinez won it, stuff like that. You know, I would like that more. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think he said something like that on stage two as well. It's like, Martinez cooked you. And put 6 seconds into third. Like, sometimes another rider's just better. It's like if Pidcock closed Kuss and Malau, and he shouldn't have. You know, could he say, oh, I lost the stage because I made... Yeah, maybe, but not really. Like, I don't know. Sometimes the criticism of Remco is unwarranted. A lot of the time, sometimes I think he opens the door for people to have a crack at him as well. Yeah. So... a bit of both. But yeah, he wins GC handily, his third win in this race. Andalusia, unfortunately, didn't happen. There was farmers' protests, which kind of like when the Tour of Britain got cancelled in 2022, when the Queen died, it meant that police resources were diverted. And so I think it meant they didn't have the necessary police resources to run the race because the Guardia Civil got called to Madrid.
Yeah.
As I understand it. And basically, we didn't know what the race would be. We knew we'd have a TT. Then it was supposed to be a TT plus 200K stages on the weekend circuits. And then eventually, those didn't even happen. So we had one prologue TT, a 5K, 3.5% TT on the Friday, which, you know, is a real shame for the race. Like,
yeah.
Because, yeah, the organizers yeah, like this is their race, and it's a lot of logistics and planning went into it, and it just doesn't happen for outside external reasons. But yeah, Maxim Van Hills wins. Bit of a surprise to me. I thought Wellens would win or Ayuso, and Lotto Destiny did really, really well overall. But the UCI should, they got to knock this down to a dot one or give it the Chrono de Nation ranking, Benji.
The Chrono de Nation ranking. Like, to be clear, originally this is a two dot pro race, which means it's a stage race of the dot pro level, which means it has 200 GC UCI points and 20 for the stage win. So that would deliver 220 towards Maxim Van Gils. But let's be honest about it. For a 4.9 kilometer TT, I find that a bit overdone. That's a bit ridiculous. So I would expect lower. Option one is reducing it to a 1 pro, which is a 1 day race of the same level, which would be 200 UCI points. But in my mind, that's kind of still a bit much. So, but then again, can you, I think it should stay the dot pro it is, but the UCI points delivery should be different. So should be like an exception to the UCI rules that is not written in the UCI rules. I see nothing that they can apply on paper, but I wouldn't give it more than a 1.1 125 points.
True, because if you make it a 1 day dot pro race, it's still 200 points. So bit of a strange one. Also the riders that were there, you know, their week of training or whatever, they've been completely messed about. So if the teams that didn't send the riders to that race probably were thankful they didn't in the end. Tour of Oman also finished midweek. Magnier and Lamperti were good again, and then Capio won a reduced sprint, and then Adam Yates cooked everybody on Green Mountain. Jebel Al-Akhtar breaking the record with ease. I think he could have gone much, much faster, and that's a very ominous sign for the UAE Tour coming up this week. Alps Maritime and Classic Var, what they've done is, instead of it being a three-day stage race, they made it a one-day race and a two-day stage race, so there's more points. I think that increases the points by like 30%. Mate.
Is everybody robbing the format of the Tour Down Under, as in a classic before they have the actual race? Then we have the Muscat Classic before the Saoman. Then
the Schwalbe
now
Classic
we have
doesn't
this.
Give UCI points.
Oh yeah, true. It's a non-UCI race. This time it is, right? Classic VAR.
The problem for TDU is Cadell's is after TDU. If Cadell's and the teams leave, Cadell's needs to be start of January when they're doing the Geelong Bay crits before TDU and Surf Coast Classic, so you get the team staying for TDU.
The Geelong Bay crits are those like sprint criterions where you have two riders sprinting against each other or something?
Yeah. But they're in the same area near Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
They're on the New Year's Day, but that's the same as the race Torquay's around there. So that's the problem with Cadell's is you have to wait another week and a half. So teams like, I don't think Jumbo Visma men's team did it. Anyway, Classic VAR, Johannesson outsprinted everybody, and then he thought the finish line was earlier. It wasn't, puts the hands up, and then Lenny Martinez scoots past him to win the race. I don't know. I've looked at the finish a few times, Benji. They were saying, oh, there's an Arrivé sign. I don't think there was an Arrivé sign at 25 meters. I think that was at the finish.
There was no Arrivé sign at 25 meters to go that I could see, but there was like a metal construction that looked like a bit of an arch around the road at 25 meters to go. To me, that didn't really seem like a finish line, but if you're in the middle of a very hard effort, you just die to try and win this race, I can see how you could confuse that, but it's so painful to watch. It's painful and funny to watch, and to see Lenny Martinez win is always fun, but to see Johannesson lose in this fashion, because he was pretty dominant on this final hill. So he was a great performance against Bardet, who went too early. So Johannesson cooked, but Lenny served a plate.
He ate it. He ate whatever meal he served. But yeah, it is. I can't remember if it actually had a roof, whatever arch it was. I guess by definition, an arch must have a roof, otherwise it's not an arch.
I didn't know that.
If it's very strange to go underneath a structure at 25 meters to go. Like that is strange.
Mate,
so
Tour Down Under did it with Alaphilippe celebrating the KOM points. It was 100 meters to go.
That was just a line on the ground, I think.
It's even worse. It's a finish line on the ground for the KOM.
I swear there's some races where there's like a million lines on the ground. I'm not surprised this doesn't happen more often. In the actual two-day stage race, a little bit not as good as the yesteryear of Quintana against Wellens, but nonetheless, Ethan Vernon won a reduced sprint for Israel Premiatek, his new team. They were here with Woods and Fuglsang. And then I think Sean Flynn became like an option for DSM on GC, but
yep.
He got dropped today. And then there was like a million riders on the French teams attacking each other on the final sort of gradual climb. And then Cosnefroid won a reduced punch sprint, an even thinner sprint. And importantly, his team at Paripantra, who let him out, took the bonies away from Albanese, meaning Cosnefroid also won GC. Albanese, I was surprised to see not picked up by another team. A good signing for Arkea. So Benoit back, Benji. Decathlon, I think this is the best they've looked in a long time, I must say.
Well, Gull wasn't too bad last year in the Tour, so that's a thing. But I agree that in these smaller French races, that they're more prominent than they were last year, in my opinion. And to want to a stage like this shows that we're probably going to see them winning more of these French-type races throughout the season. And hopefully, they can also pick up a race of a higher level throughout this year. Because we want to see Benoit back in action on the punchy hills whenever they exist in Paris-Nice or Tour de France or Dauphiné or something. We want Benoit back. But anyway, those races are past us. We've also got a women's race, a one-week stage race, 4 days technically. Balsamo won the sprint on the first day ahead of Marianne Vos. Bit of a, I would say, a reduced sprint. There were quite a bit of riders in the group. As in, it was reduced initially, but then people came back. Stage two was more of a GC kind of day where there was a group that survived the climbs, and then Royster had a very well-timed attack away from the group, and she took 30 seconds on the rest, and that would be a very valuable 30 seconds, because on day three is the actual like queen stage with Chore de Cati. I think we know that climb from the Vuelta a few times in the past. Yeah. But Niefischer Black, SD Works teammate of Royster, was really strong that day, winning relatively comfortably, in my opinion, over Realini. So I don't know. Is it Realini that isn't at the level I was expecting? Or have we seen Fischer Black, Neve Bradbury step up? Or is it a combination of both?
I think Fischer Black starts seem to have stepped up. I think she's doing good numbers, and yeah, I think Fischer Black looks really, really good. Maybe she's just targeted better races. It is a super steep climb, Jarre de Cati, especially solo. And yeah, the SD Works machine keeps on rolling with the GC win for Royster. Like, they just don't stop winning, and even holding on Royster on a climb that difficult. I mean, it's not that difficult, but you know, it is the climb where Koos actually, that's where he took the GC lead, I'm pretty sure. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. That was the day before in the Vuelta last year. I think this is the stage Roglic one where Remco led him out and didn't know where the finish line was.
so, that's true. But hey,
it's a hard
Balsamo
climb.
Won stage four as well. So two stage wins for Balsamo. I'm hoping that this is a sign that we're going to see her back at the old level. But then again, last year she also won two stages in Valenciana, which was before the classics, where she wasn't at the level I was necessarily hoping she would be. So let's hope this year is a bit better. But anyway, Clásica Jaén, the last one on the list when it comes to race recaps.
Oh, just one point on that. We got to start a tracker for Kasia Nevyedova. In this race, fourth, fifth, third, second on GC. She hasn't won for a race in 4.5 years. We got to get her a win. We have to will it. As an organization, as
road
an institution.
Race, right? We're not counting gravel worlds.
No. I don't know what that is. CX track, gravel worlds. This doesn't enter my estimation. It's like, is it on PCS listed as a professional win? If it's not, maybe the gravel ones are actually. Actually, no, it's not. So, not to be dismissive of that, but, you know, this is road cycling. It's a serious business. So yeah, we got to get her a win somehow, and she's so good.
Yeah.
Maybe Omloop is not the one next week for that to happen. But yeah, sorry. Go on, Benji. Clásica Jaén
was a bit of a race where I don't know, it got reduced because of weather conditions, if I recall correctly, where there were limited... the rain, for example, but there were limited gravel segments left. It was already changed the parkour to an easier climbs, because in the past, there were like long gravel climbs. Now it was like shorter gravel climbs. That's how I would explain this parkour. But Oil Lascano was basically in a breakaway with 4 minute advantage when the gravel segment started. And I started watching this race when the gravel segment started and I saw Lascano in a 4 minute breakaway. And I was like, who let him in there? Like, I was shocked he was in there in the first place, because I consider Lascano a rider for winning this from the group behind already.
I couldn't believe it. When I looked, I saw 5 minute lead. What has happened there? And I'm not sure. It's like, there's no television coverage. We don't know exactly what happened, but I was like, what the hell? 5 minutes. You're never going to bring it back, because the finish is not that hard anymore. And it's not like a 220K race. So yeah, he basically, Van Aert punctured, Ineos sent it. The Visma Lease Bike riders were there with Wellens. They attacked. It stopped. Lascano trucked along with Nicola Prudhomme, and they never caught him. So that was the race, really. I would say that's why Decathlon, the reason I say they're having their better season so far, is sort of this race where you see someone like Nicola Prudhomme, who's been, he's been cannon fodder in stage racing breakaways in the past.
Yes.
And then I thought the same would happen here. And then he's attacking Lascano. He's finishing fifth. He's not collapsing. And Tronchon, who also showed a bit of promise, but not too much, he beats Tratnik and Wellens. Admittedly, he was sitting on, but he beats Tratnik and Wellens to finish second in this race. And so they got Prudhomme and Tronchon second and fifth. And that's just amongst Lascano, Tratnik, Wellens, and Kwiatkowski, etc. That's where I'm like, ooh. So maybe they're Sierra camp. They're all in Granada, I think. Maybe that worked. Maybe the bikes are better. I don't know. But certainly 19th last year in the ranking, the sponsors want them to do better than that.
I also hope that we can see that same effect on Felix Gall, because imagine Felix Gall with like a bit of a step up again, if he can find a way to TT like a regular cyclist. Then he might be able to get close. He was 14th at the Andalusia TT, but that was a bit of a climb. He won 3.5%. So I'm not sure I can consider that 100% as the one we need to look at. But I want to see that Paris-Nice, I think, is his right next race. I want to see what he does there, to be honest. It's not in my head the ideal parkour for Felix Gall.
No, Tirreno would have been better.
But hey, we will still see whether he has form or not, regardless of that. Tronchon was also a name next to Prudhomme. So fully agree. I just wonder if Oil Lascano will also be underestimated when it comes to the classics that are coming. Because if you see what he does in Jaén, he's on the level of... Is he on the level of Mohoric, if you see the type of rider? Or like, where would you place him? Asgreen?
Well, let's be serious. I mean, it depends what Asgreen you get. It's kind of like, Lascano right now might be better than Asgreen, but Asgreen's got a very wide range of what he can do. world beater or dropped in from a group of 80. I don't know which one you're going to get this classic season. But in terms of Lascano being allowed in the breakaway, again, absolutely not. opening weekend, and it's not happening. The word has come down from everybody, of course, because he's just so annoying. If you were like in... No, because this is what happens, right? That's why he's so effective. It's like he actually is more like, to me, Dylan Van Baarle is a better comparison. Because he just does his pace the whole time, this heavy, heavy pace. He climbs really well, especially on the gradual stuff. And then, you know, UAE, Jumbo, Ineos are starting to infight behind. The second they stop, they give back another 30 seconds. Because he just keeps trucking.
Yep.
And technically, Prudhomme was beating him a bit on the downhills and the corners, but just the raw power of this guy is... Yeah, so I think Dylan Van Baarle is a good comp for him. That's how I could see him winning Roubaix in a similar fashion, actually. But yeah, unfortunately for him, he's put the marker down that last year wasn't a fluke, so...
And
I'd be surprised if he was allowed in the break.
He's going to be arriving at Classics races solo... in his team. Like, he's not going to have much support surrounding him in the classics, yeah. I would reckon. So Lascano is going to be a lone man, but I feel like that also kind of frees him in some shape or form. So I'm curious what that does. But anyway, let's get to the previews of the next few races coming up. We got cool races coming up, UAE Tour, Omloop, Kuurne. How about we start with the UAE Tour and then we jump into like a proper classics preview?
Yeah, because we'll do a classics deep dive.
I want to talk about it. But anyway, UAE Tour. Two sprints, plus Jebel Jais, then three sprints, then Jebel Hafid. The usual scenario, Jebel Hafid's last stage was a great change in my opinion. But in reality, I think Adam Yates cleans this unless they find a way to get rid of him in echelons.
Well, stage one, I'm a bit of a specialist on the parkour in the Middle East. Stage one looks different to me. They're going from Madinat Zayed to Livar. I don't know if they've done this before, but they go south into what looks to me like a hilly dune zone around a cycle track. And no categorized climbs, but it looks very, very up and down, short stage. Don't know the wind conditions, but that looks different. We don't know how difficult those hills are, but maybe it is. It is just a sprint. Al Hudayrat Island TT we've seen before. That's a big loop. Oh, yeah, not a big loop, 12Ks. Dan has done well there before. I think won that one. Dubai Harbour we know as a sprint. And the others are basically sprints. You know, Jais and Hafid. So usually stage one was the crosswind stage, but it's a different stage this year. It is in the desert, so maybe if the wind is right, we could get it tomorrow. I guess, to your point, Benji, if you're not UAE, you got to try to drop him tomorrow. You have to.
Yep. I think so as well. Like, there's also the fact that when it comes to other GC riders, I'm looking at a Bilbao Van Wilder Jan Hirt, who was good at Green Mountain, but then again, who knows? He might get poisoned again at UAE Tour. Aina Rubio, Simon Carr. Simon Carr is also a name where I feel like at Mallorca he was good. So I feel like top 10 here is not impossible. Van Eetveld top 10, I reckon, is also possible. Poel, Bart Lemmen.
Yeah.
He's there. I'm seeing Valter also on the provisional start list. I'm not sure if he's confirmed or not.
Yeah, Valter's doing it.
So yeah, I feel like Yates is like a lot above all the rest.
Yeah, because there's no Remco last year, and then Poggi other years.
Yeah.
So there is a big gap, and then Plap was good in really good in the TT. So there's not even like a really strong TTing GC rider who'll beat him in the TT and defend on her feet, because Yates has got a better TT than most of the other serious guys here. I would say he's no slouch. So, like Bilbao, he put 54 seconds into on her feet last year, and there's no way Bilbao beats him by 30 in the TT.
Yeah. Correction. I said sprint on stage two, but it's obviously a TT. It's 12.1 kilometers.
Yeah.
Completely flat. It's the typical one on like little island thingy, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's some good photos normally of that one with the cityscape behind. Yeah, there's a TTT last year, which I believe Quickstep won with Merlier and Remco. Yates is the prohibitive favorite. Frankly, yeah. I don't see him losing. Like, unless there's heavy crosswinds tomorrow or he crashes, there's no way he can lose. Because he just, the others can't do his 30-minute, 25-minute numbers that he can do. And he just showed on Green Mountain. He broke the record breathing through his nose. He could have gone much, much quicker. And I like Van Eetveld. But date, he hasn't shown Yates the watts. Yeah. Like Yates podium the Tour de France last year. We all know how good he is. The sprinting, Benji, seems a lot more equal to me. This is what I'm looking forward to perhaps more. This is like really, really stacked. Jakobsen, Coy, Decline. Jesus, Luke wrote this. Got three Dutch riders first. Groves, Cavendish, Milano, Bauhaus, Groenewegen, Merlier, Welsford, Bennett, Maresco. I don't know how he got in here. What the hell are polar bear doing here? Viviani, Ackerman, Gaviria. That is a... Who are we missing? Philipsen.
Yeah, he ain't here.
Don't you think it's a bit strange they sent Philipsen to openings weekend and Groves to UAE? I would have done it the other way around.
I think it's probably a personal decision that Philipsen wants to ride the opening weekend, because I would have indeed said that Philipsen can clean these sprints. I think that's fair to say. Instead, we're now going to see Groves most likely lose these sprints because Groves was good at La Vuelta, but he was sprinting against lesser competition. And he's not a pure flat sprinter 100%. He's a versatile sprinter in my eyes still. And yes, he can sprint relatively well against second tier and third tier sprinters, but against the top sprinters, he's unlikely to beat them every time. So I'm looking at, I hope that Jakobsen gets it right, because that means we've got another man at the top level again this year. But I think it's going to be Melier, Welsford and Coy sharing the sprints this year in UAE Tour.
Yeah, Merlier, I think, looks the sharpest. He's had a really bad lead out the last 2 years, like really, really bad a lot of the time. When he is in position, he wins. Chew to have a good lead out. Visma don't bring Affini or Van Aert, so it's the Van Dijk brothers and Van der Sande, yeah, with Coy, so they won't have the strongest lead out. I would say in terms of, strongest lead outs and sprinter, you can't go past Bora Hansgrohe. Welsford, yep, with Mullen, Van Poppel, Gamp and Masiuk. They showed it in TDU. We've got the same easy stages here. Van Poppel put Bennett in position to win multiple times a couple of years ago or last year, and he couldn't finish it off. And so Welsford and that train is the team to beat. I would, yep, say Cav comes here with Mirku, Siriza, No Bol, who was with him in Colombia. But we'll see how they go against stiffer competition than he had in South America.
Yeah. Bol's go doing the opening weekend. He's going to Omloop. Okay. So okay, that's why he's not here. But it's still a lot of sprinting competition. It's still good to see, but I wish Philipsen was here, because then we could see the top sprinters sprint against each other in a race that is, in my opinion, one of the best races to see sprinters race against each other throughout the season, because these are the most straightforward sprints you often get. And that's why I also enjoy these sprint stages in the UAE Tour more than a lot of people, apparently. Then again, I enjoy them. With 5K to go. So,
because you compare the sprinter start list here to the Giro or the Vuelta, Tour aside.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable start list for sprinters. Every team, yep, is brought, like Ackerman, I've not seen him on Israel Premier Tech yet. Bennett, I've seen him so far not looking good in Provence. Well, too good, but how will he go? So, at Decathlon. So I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe Milano, with not much of a lead out, will steal a stage like he did last year. But yeah, UAE with McNulty, Vine, Yates, honestly could... not just winning, but two on the podium is probably the bare minimum they'll be expecting.
Yeah,
I would say. Anything else to look out for from this race, Benji? Probably the biggest World Tour stage race so far this year.
Not really. I think that's the list I have. I think Yates is going to destroy GC. I'm curious to see what Van Aertveld can do after the Mallorca challenges, what Bart Lemmen can do after San Fernando, to kind of see a view on that again, and to see what Jan Hirt Foss can do TT as well. Because if Jan Hirt can keep that level throughout the entire year that he had at Jabal al-Adar, then he can also be a strong nomastique for Quickstep. And you're right, Foss TT, yeah, there's quite a bit of interesting things to look at. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That's UAE Tour. And it's during the day, so I like it. Okay, now on to the classics. The season starting opening weekend with Omloop and Kerner. I am sure the Omloop route is the same, starting in Ghent, finishing in Nineveh. It is a pretty hard race. I went and watched the 2017 edition today because someone shared on Twitter Sagan riding with Van Avermaet and Van Marke. It's actually, I love watching the old races, Benji, because then I compare. Yeah. The way Sagan rode is so different to MVDP. Sagan was in a group of six at 50Ks to go and literally pulled to the finish, basically.
And he lost.
Yeah, of course. And he lost. I was like, no surprise he lost. It's like unbelievable.
Worst part is? We were watching the same video this morning when we woke up, me and my wife, and the main thing that stood out to me was, this was just after he won the Olympics, and he wasn't wearing a golden helmet.
Oh, Golden Greg.
Yeah. He had his gold on his shirt, but not on his helmet.
Did he get worse when they gave him the golden helmet and golden bike? Maybe it sapped his powers.
Yeah.
Who's the current Olympic champion? Carapaz.
Carapaz.
Yeah, and they gave him a heavy bike at Ineos because they painted it gold or bronze.
We're not making that discussion again. Is bronze or gold heavy?
It was bronze. It wasn't gold. No way. Is a gram of gold heavier than a gram of bronze? I'll let you answer. But yeah, Omloop, very, very hard parkour compared to that when you have the Wolkenberg, and the Molenberg, Baron Dries. Gone are the days, I think, what we saw last year. But like the Moor Kapel Moor, waiting for a big blowout there, Benji, it's like, yeah, other teams are not going to wait for there when you have, I think you can't really go past the Visma Lisa bike team they're bringing here is ridiculous. Van Aert, who won in 22, Van Baal, who won last year, Laporte, Benoit, Tratnik, Jorgensen, Affini, six of those seven riders could win this race.
Fully agree, to the point that you're thinking Affini is the ruler in this team, and you've got six riders that could be doing opening stuff already in like the earlier segments, and you've got the obvious Wout van Aerts and Laporte and Van Baarle as well. So you've got so many riders where you're thinking, is there any team other than Visma on the start list that is going to think, oh, let me help with controlling the breakaway? Like, fuck no.
That's what we're discussing. Like, who's going
to... Affini's going to have to work the entire fucking race.
You're like, Ado, you know what? Take a load off. Take a load off, buddy. We got Case Bowl back there. Fedorov comes to the front. Get on my wheel, Ado. I'll manage this. You're right. It's like, it's a ridiculous team. I mean, I'm looking through. Maybe, I mean, Trek. Are you surprised Trek, the big new, apart from that start list, the other classics rider who is not here, who is in the best shape, mm-hmm. not talking about MVDP or Poggi, they never sort of do opening weekend, but Pedersen, don't you think it's strange that he did the Farmers Protest Classics, Étoile de Bessèges and Provence, and then skips opening weekend with such good shape?
I fully agree that I wanted to see Pedersen at this race, but with Milan coming to the team, I think internally they wanted to make sure Milan could ride a bunch of these classics so that Pedersen can ride the ones that he actually needs to win. Like, or the ones that he wants to win. Needs to win is a bit over the top. But I agree, I would have liked to at least see him at Omloop and then Milan, for example, at Kuurne.
Yes.
While if I take a look at the provisional start list of Kuurne, Milan nor Pedersen is on it. Where
no.
Then I'm like, ooh.
Milan has to do Kuurne.
In my head said the same.
He has to. But yeah, like, I was really, really surprised to see that. I would think with Pedersen and Milan, they're complementary. You have Pedersen's more the attack. He gets in a group ahead, doesn't have to work because I got this really quick sprinter behind. And he can
even
win
without
that sprint.
The sprinter, he does it.
Yeah. So I was really surprised to see that. And I take your point. He might be, I'm sure there's a reason. This is more a fan in me speaking. I wanted to see Pedersen at the race with the shape he's got. You can see, I think he animates the race. And there could be bad weather where he gets like 50 watt buff. But I'm sure there's a reason. Maybe he wants to peak for Flanders or Roubaix. But then I'm thinking, like, if your Trek, isn't winning one of the opening weekend races kind of a really, like, it's actually attainable goal?
Yeah.
And they don't win it. They didn't win a big classic last year. Am I right?
Like, when Pedersen won Gent Wevelgem against Van der Poel and Wout van Aert, that was a big thing for Trek that year. And Omloop would also be pretty damn big, in my opinion. So I wanted to see Stuyven plus Pedersen plus Milan, with Pedersen as the obvious leader, with Milan as the backup sprinter, Stuyven as domestique slash rider that goes into early moves to try and upset other people a bit. That's kind of the vibe I get. Then again, Stuyven would ride in any group, even if it would be negative towards Pedersen. But that being said, that would be a team that I would put not at the level of Visma, but on a level where they could be seen as, okay, you need to help control the race a bit. If you're Visma, you're thinking that. But with the team they're sending now, I think Visma can't show up at their team car and say, you guys need to put Tim de Klerk for the brake control at the start. Then again, that's what he's made to do. That's what he was born to do. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe they try to put the clerk in the break. I don't know.
Why not?
Why not? You got to use him some way. Probably the favorite for the race is Van Aert, and then probably three other Visma riders. But then probably the nearest favorite not on that team is Arno Daly on Lotto Destiny. They look good in January in the Mallorcan races. Then they went to Tenerife and Teide. I would say Daly looked... It's hard to say, but in Classic Arena, I thought he looked a little bit... Yeah, he got dropped earlier than I expected.
And
in Murcia.
And in Almeria, his sprint wasn't what I expected it to be, in addition to that. So
no.
I'm not going to the Omloop with full confidence that Daly will be at the same level of last year. I need to see something before I can say something like that. Like, his team surrounding him, Kampenaerts, De Bust, Berlens, Grignard, and Van Moor, I'm pretty sure, if I go through this.
Yeah.
I'm on the right roster, right? That's a professional start list. So...
Berlens look good. I think he's a good rider.
He was 28 or something in Roubaix last year. So I think he's really good as like a...
He topped in Rouen last type week.
Classics rider. Van Moor was at a good level in Bessège, if I recall correctly. Kampenaerts, I'm not sure about. As in, I would expect Kampenaerts to be at a decent level. But I can't vividly recall him being amazing in the races we've seen so far yet. Then again, it's been a very limited amount of races.
He only did Andalusia TT so far.
Well,
but I actually thought I thought he'd do better there as well. So I think Daly, it could be that he came down from altitude not feeling good, and he'll be fine in a week.
Yeah,
I don't know, but he'll be, when you look at him in Omloop last year, crashed in a corner, came back. In time for Molenberg, missed
also,
the split. Oh, was right there, and then dropped everybody on the Moor, except Moritz and the Wellens. Pulled, then beat Laporte in the sprint. That's the guy. So I'm hoping we see that.
I'm hoping we see that as well. But it's also like he hasn't won this year in the lead up either. Which last year he was cleaning up Bessège, except on Mont Bouquet.
Yeah.
Then in Morocco he won something as well, so
yeah.
He had been winning, so for the confidence I think that would also have helped if he already won Almeria or something. So anyway, let's hope we've got a competitor in that rider. But
how do you think the race will play out?
How do I think the race will play out? There's so many scenarios, because last year, if I recall correctly, there was a split on the Kattenberg already, which was very early in the race,
yes.
Like one of the earlier hills, where Visma had a group of like
five to six
riders before coverage, with Daly in the group, with some other riders in the group. But the thing that always seems to happen in those scenarios is that you then suddenly get like a different split, you know, like, because nobody's going to be working with six Jumbo riders or Visma riders. So then they try and get another rider ahead and so forth. But eventually that got crawled back. And I think Molenberg is always the climb that I think of when I think of Omloop Nieuwsblad. You know? That's logical, right? That's like the narrow
turn,
climb.
Narrow running.
Steep, narrow running, fight for positioning. That's super important. That's where a Visma could literally put a Fina at the front with six riders behind him, and then they hope that they've got a split with four Visma riders or something up the road. But that also feels like a telephoned-in thing, as in, that's what a lot of teams will expect Visma to do. So will they try to do it earlier on? I'm not sure which climb really fits. We're thinking Valkenberg, Wolvenberg. Is that a scenario where you can see that happen? Because how I see it, is that Visma is the only team on the start list that I expect to initiate at a certain point in this race, and the other teams will have to like rack up and be ready when that happens.
And unlike the Tour of Flanders, you look at the parkour and you're like, well, can they anticipate that whenever that bomb is going to get dropped? It's like, well, okay, well, let's say Wellens and Moritz and Asgreen go in like literally the first Hollevig or something, and let's assume it's good weather. There's a 50% chance of rain. If it's bad weather, cold, 5 degrees, wind, all bets are off.
Yeah.
Shit can hit the fan from literally the Haarhoek with 40 k's done. Like, it really depends on the weather. Assuming good weather, like if they go on the Paterstraat with 80Ks to go, there's like half an hour of asphalt,
yeah,
sort of big roads where they're going to get chased down. It's not like Tour of Flanders when Pedersen went on the Tyrenberg and then it was hard. So, yeah, it's going to be... I don't see how Philipsen can win this race. Unless he is taking a big, big step up, I think it's been very, very difficult for someone like that. What about Binnie?
I don't know, man. I think he might be too isolated. Does that make sense?
Yeah. One Surf Coast Classic, good in his TDU sprints.
The thing I see with Dalí, with Binyam, with all those riders, and I'm not sure Milan has it to get over all these hills if shit hits a fan either in a similar way as Philipsen. Like, he's versatile. Philipsen's versatile as well, but when shit truly hits the fan, they'll need to be there too, you know? And then I look at Binyam and Dalí, and those are riders that can get over a hill or two, that can get over these hills and maybe make these splits and so forth. And then I'm thinking, then you're stuck in a group with 75 Visma riders. So good luck solving that scenario. So then there's so much that can occur here, but it's also, I agree with this, with what you're saying when it comes to the parkour. It's not RVV. It's not likely that you can open up the race with 100 kilometers to go in an easy way. And it just lasts. Because last year it happened like that, eh? It opened up early, but it didn't necessarily last.
And it opened, and then Van Baal anticipated straight after the regroupment after Molenberg, and that was it.
Yep.
There really wasn't too much else, and then Milan went with him. The big name I guess we haven't mentioned is Pidcock, who I'm glad he's here, and is someone who looked pretty good in Algarve. Like, he came third on the stage to Malal today, so... he also brings with him... he brings with him Turner and Hajduk, but he doesn't have Sheffield, at least on the provisional start list. They've only got six listed. So it's not Ineos' best classics team. Maybe Sheff is going. So he might be... I think he'd be isolated early. Pidcock. Surely Kwiatkowski will do it as well.
If Turner shows up, then he's... Normally, if he's in decent shape, also relatively good surrounding Pidcock, I would reckon.
Yeah, he's
but
good,
those are also the limited names. So I feel like Ineos is not here with their best team. That's how I perceive that list. And there's other teams where I'm also thinking, okay, there's a few riders missing that I expected to perhaps be here. Like, the obvious one is that Van der Poel is not here, of course, that we don't have the Pogacars of the world, that we're looking at Van Aert and the Visma team as the obvious favorites. And Quickstep, we're looking at Alaphilippe and Asgreen, and like,
yeah, what do you expect
two riders
from
where
them?
Wasn't expecting them?
Or what do you expect from them?
Oh, I kind of feel like I'm expecting them to try and follow whatever shit hits the fan and then try and benefit from a situation like that. Because I don't see this team as necessarily the initiation one. I'm curious to see what Moscon is like back at Quickstep. That's
true,
one where I'm really curious, because that could do something. I maybe expected a Lamperti or Manier to show up in Kuurne or one of them in Omloop. But to see, I think Lamperti might be in Kuurne. I'm not sure about it, but I might have expected one of them to show up on the Quickstep side list for Omloop. No.
Yeah, I'm surprised that neither of those two are here, and that Gil Gelders is not here. And he's not doing UAE Tour either, so he's back from the Middle East. So I'm surprised maybe they didn't want to have the young guys do Oman and then do opening weekend, because all three of them did that. But Gil Gelders impressed me in TDU. He won Gent Wevelgem Juniors or U23. Like, frankly, I would have him instead of Casper Pedersen. They do have Wara. How do you say, Benji? Van Geluwe.
Relatively perfect, actually. I'm proud of you.
I'm flying. He's a classic.
Axel Zangler,
top 10. Young talented French rider in Cofidis. I got to say, he's consistent in Provence. But I hoped he would beat Pedersen. I was looking for that extra step up when Pedersen did all the work. Bahrain, you can't count out, they'll be active, as well as I'm surprised Kolesnikov's not here for decathlon. There's a lot of those sort of riders who I'm surprised are not here. Like, they're in good shape. I know he's probably going to do the French Classics, or like Michael Matthews. They're not going to win Tour of Flanders, and they're not doing this race where I think they can get a really good result, especially someone like Matthews. It's surprising to me. But
are we disrespecting Wellens by mentioning him in a limited fashion? Because I feel like he's in the same scenario that I see. You said comparing Lascano to Mohoric might not be perfect, but I feel like when it comes to their role in the race, the way they should probably play it, they're all going to be thinking similarly. Like Wellens, Lascano, like Mohoric, they'll all try to anticipate because they can't sprint.
That's the problem for Wellens. He really can't sprint at all. So, well, he was what? Top three strongest in opening weekend last year, fair to say? Because he got caught at the finish line in Omloop, and he and Moritz dropped to Lee on the Mur, and then Koerner, he was very strong, but Visma's tactics played him and Moritz. But he's just, if you're isolated and there's four Visma's, and you got Jorgensen now in the team, Tratnik, who is unbelievable shape, like, it's so difficult to do anything or to do your own race. You just have to, you're always reacting. Maybe the other team should align and against Visma. Maybe I think we'll see that. And we'll see that from probably kilometer zero, where they're like, no, you chose the breakaway. You brought 6 liters and one rouleur.
Yeah.
Spend the rouleur for 3 hours. But that's Omloop. Who you got winning?
Well, who I got winning? Ooh, that's a difficult one. Oh my God. Trotnik's been looking so good the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to pick Trotnik.
I want to go with Trotnik too, but... Well, I said his name first, so I can.
Yeah, you can go.
But I think it's boring to pick a Visma rider when they show up with 6 liters. So we've been talking about decathlon riders, but we didn't mention them. Like, do we expect the resurgence of decathlon in the classics? Do we expect the Bond, Nas, and the Pestle and so forth to show up? The Pestle was, I don't know, he had an okay time trial at Andalusia, I guess. But, I think Kung is going to do well. I think Kung will
Kung
top 10.
Kung is good, Nagav, yeah.
But winning? I'm not sure he has it to win on Lope. So, fuck, man. I'll go with Trotnik.
Okay, I will go with... Yeah, Tratnik was who I would also pick. But I'm going to go with Val. I'm going to go with the favorite, Wout van Aert. I don't think he's giving... Yeah, I think he's going to want to make a statement. And Algarve was the prep.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Race. Koerner's the next day. Koerner is like a different sort of race in that it's flat in the last 80 or 70 kilometers, but there's a much longer hill zone with longer hills. The Kreuzberg, Côte de Trieux, 1.2k, 7%, the Kreuzberg, the Mont Saint-Laurent. So it's really, can the hares or the climby boys get enough of a gap so they can hold on for 60k's after that hill zone for the sprinters team? So I really like Koerner. It's really delivered excitement the last few years. I seem to remember the Asgreen one was very, very good. But that start list is usually very, very similar. A few more sprinters come in, like Demar for Arkea, and riders like Binny, I think, become much more realistic in winning, because there's no... If Visma don't get it right in the hill zone and they don't get enough of a gap, or predictably no teams work with them after that, and Intermarché and other teams can band together on a flat parkour to chase, then it's much more realistic that Binnie can win a sprint or Philipsen can win the sprint. He's here for Alpecin de Koenig. So I see Koenig as much more, not much more, but quite more, a bit more open than Omlo.
It's kind of the 1 year where I feel like I don't have confidence in a sprinting Koenig.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason that I think that's the case is because when I look at the provisional start list, there's only one sprinter there. So that helps my case. Actually, DeMar's here as well. I hadn't noticed DeMar yet, but I'm looking at Philipsen, if I recall, DeMar, if I recall. And then we're looking at Apiffy, Govacar. Well, Binnie, like, if you're Binnie, you don't want to sprint against Philipsen on the line either. Right? You won the harder race anyway, so...
Would you rather sprint against Philipsen than Koenig? Or be in a group of four Vismas?
I agree, I don't know. But I think beating Philipsen in the sprint is also an unlikely scenario. Yeah. De Lee's not on the provisional start list.
Yeah.
I would have preferred to see De Lee here. Because if you're De Lee, you want to get... Your goal if you're De Lee is winning a classic, right?
Yeah. So, and Koenig is a prestigious race.
Yeah, so I would have liked seeing him in Koenig instead of like Le Samad the next week, for example, stuff like that. But he ain't here, so we got to live with it. Christoph's of the world, should we still count that as like top sprinter? I don't know.
Nah, Christoph can't sprint anymore. Varnschild's better.
So I'm not looking at the biggest sprint field, and as a consequence, I feel like we're just going to have an open race, have a hard race. Wind will play a role most likely. And I think this is the one where Visma could clean if they really get it right.
I'm going to go with Marius Meyerhofer winning this race just because Tudor looked all right. He looked okay in a sprint in Algarve, yep. Decent in Mallorca, decent on a hilly course in Figuera. So I'm going to go with him. And another one who's doing Koenig is Vito Breit, 23-year-old on Intermarché. Just watch out for him. He might sneak a top 10 if it's a really, really hard race. He seems to climb decently well. So, but yeah, otherwise I'll go for Laporte, probably. I'd say Laporte winning this.
I've got a 1-2 for Visma with Van Aert gifting it to Van Baarle. Why would he gift it to Van Baarle? It makes no sense.
Van Baarle's he doesn't need gifts.
Benoit is like a previous winner, but Benoit's just been, I think, he had COVID at the start of the year, then crashed last week in Algarve, if I recall correctly.
Yeah,
so
he did.
I'm not sure if we can expect the Benoit that we had last year. He was also sick last year, but that was earlier before his prep. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to expect from Benoit, but I don't expect him to be on the level of Trotnik.
Is the preview of these two races, does that mean we both think, Benji, that what happened last year is set to be repeated this year, which is that essentially Visma will dominate most of the classics up to the Tour of Flanders and Roubaix, and then the big boss comes in, Van der Poel, and everything changes once he's in the race?
I think that's a scenario I'm looking at, because Visma has the team that they should be cleaning up. These smaller classics, to be honest. And then when it comes to these big races, the ones where we're looking at Ronde van Vlaanderen, where we look at Paris-Roubaix, those are ones where it is more difficult to apply your numerical advantage than it is on these smaller classics, because it's harder to get through 250 kilometers of a Tour of Flanders. There's more altitude meters. Half of your team will end up dropping by the time the final really happens. You will have to respond to more anticipation because there's more space to anticipate in the big races. So in RVV, the group with, was it Asgreen last year together with, was it Merlier that was in the group helping him, for example, with Jorgensen and so forth. Those kind of groups happen in RVV. In Roubaix, you'll have anticipation as well. Roubaix is an added luck percentage on top of that. I do feel like this is the best year for Wout van Aert compared to last year to win RVV. Because while Van der Poel is there, and I consider Van der Poel to have an advantage on Van Aert, I would say that Pogacar not being an RVV is a major bonus for Van Aert. Because if Pogacar's there, Van Aert can't win.
Yeah, when Pogacar can do the last 50 kilometers 3 minutes faster than Van Aert.
Yeah.
So what tactics, I'm all ears, what, there's not many tactics to defend against that. Like Pogacar's just special in the final Tour of Flanders. So Roubaix's different. Roubaix, Van Aert is his best race, or the race he's most naturally suited towards. But yeah, whereas Van der Poel still is the best overall classics rider in the world, but the sort of on Quarmont, I'm less expecting him and to just like ride away from Van Aert with 55 kilometers to go in Flanders. But yeah, that's the sort of, I expect a similar pattern to last year. And so hopefully we have exciting races on opening weekend. Hopefully it's, well, not, if it's bad weather and crosswinds, unfortunately, we probably won't see that before coverage starts. Coverage normally starts around the Paddelstraat Haaghoek, first Haaghoek, with about 100 or 90 Ks to go. But yeah, that was our opening weekend preview. We'll obviously have daily coverage of those races. Tour de Rwanda also kicked off today. Quickstep Dev Team won the TTT. The GC favourites, William Le Cerf, who looked very, very good in Saudi when he attacked on Skyview's climb. So he's against Latour, I guess.
Latour, Chris Froome. Hey, we got to keep in mind Chris Froome. There was another name that I thought of when I was looking through the start list outside.
Glivar, the Slovenian.
Yeah, Gal Glivar on the UAE Kiddo team, on the Gen Z team, I think was the name of it. But that being said, I reckon Le Cerf, Latour, Glivar might end up being the top three of this race. But they had a TTT today, not counting for GC, but allowing teams to use TT bikes if they have it. So some teams that don't have that to their availability, road bikes, some TT bikes. I don't know. It's weird for me to have a TT that doesn't count for GC. My head does not make sense. But I guess it's a compromise for the fact that not every team can have TT bikes. But then just do the TTT normal bikes.
My guess would be don't do a TTT at all.
Yeah, exactly.
What is the point?
Showing off the teams, I guess?
To practice, like it's an advantage for the dev teams. Otherwise, when are these young guys going to practice doing a TTT? The first TTT they're going to do is in a World Tour stage race.
Yeah.
At UAE Tour. So maybe or Paris-Nice. So maybe that's the attraction for it. I think they should do the same in L'Avenir. I don't think in L'Avenir it should count for GC. Even if they do want to do it for development, it shouldn't count towards GC. Otherwise, Gran Camino is probably the other stage race that's worth watching this week. Very, very strong start list. Weakened a little bit because Quintana's out with COVID infection that he apparently picked up. Yeah, he wasn't
ain't moving
good
the
anyway.
Needle, mate.
Yeah. But this is where, I mean, Ineos team is much stronger than its UAE Tour team. Hayter, Rodriguez, Castro, Fraile, Bernal, Tarlin, Kwiatkowski, they ain't messing about. That's one of their, that's like a Vuelta team, frankly. Carapaz here for EF alongside Piccolo, Paulus, Uran, and Carthy. That's their Vuelta or Tour team. Sosa here, but Quintana was supposed to be here. And Lenny Martinez and Gurdu. That's their Tour team, Groupama FDJ. And obviously then Vingegaard returns, the Tour de France champion, with Tullet and Oterbrooks, Kelderman, not sure who else. So this race, Benji, restarted 2 years ago in 2022 and now has a ridiculous start list.
I agree, but despite the ridiculous start lists, Vingegaard should clean this. I know it's start of the season, but Vingegaard should clean this.
Well, I mean, his GC rivals that I've just read out, unfortunately, there's a hilly ITT, 15Ks. He should be beating Rodriguez in that sort of TT if he's in any sort of shape. But I guess There's some tricky medium mountain stages, like stage two from Tabawara to Shantara. They do repetitions of a 5K 6% climb. EF, I dare say, might try something there.
Yeah, but
there's another hill stage. Gunnapol
always try too early.
Yeah. And then the final stage is 7Ks 8%. So it's going to be a good race. I mean, if you see these guys attacking each other, it's always exciting in a 2.1. I can't wait to watch. Do you think... is Hayter the favourite for the TT? No, Tarling.
Tarling. Even with the hill and the slight cobble section at the end.
Okay.
It's not a crazy hill, right? Let me check it to be sure. They're not spreading nonsense.
1.5
kilometres, 4.8%. Tarling should win this time trial.
Okay. And then Hayter, it's going to be tough for him if they kick off on stage two. It is a flat finish, but after 5K, 6% climb. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this race. And
Berwick.
Yep, he starts here for Caja Rural. He did Andalusia and Murcia, but yeah. Let him go in the breakaway. Come on, let him have a break win.
I also want to mention Jefferson Alvaro Cepeda.
Yeah.
He did a shockingly good Vuelta Andalusia TT. Fourth.
He looked good last year in Andalusia too. There's also Davide Piganzoli, who just won the Tour of Antalya, which Benji attended. He also beat Isaac Del Toro in the mountaintop finish TT in L'Avenir last year, the Italian climbing prospect. He was second to Ricciatello, the other Italian-American climbing prospects. So how will he go on these shorter climbs against more serious competition? That'll be an interesting acid test for him on Polti Cometa. There's also the French Opening Hill Classics. They're good races, but I'll be honest with you, I watch them during the week after opening weekend because, yeah, I want to focus on the Belgian Classics. That's all the race previews and recaps, Benji. I want to talk about the Alpes and De Koninck kit first. I think the UCI has to step in and do something. And obviously the opportunity for that has passed because I presume kits go to the UCI for approval. The amount of navy with white accent kits in the peloton at the moment is unbelievable. If we look through the teams, Quickstep, now Alpecin, and they already had it, Movistar, Little Trek, Groupama, FDJ. It's five kits.
Israel
is very, very similar, but like Alpecin's is identical to Quickstep's now. They've changed the kit to, yeah, it's a double denim, but it goes blue, then a white band in the middle with a red with Alpecin, but that's where the Sudal is on the Quickstep, so the same red patch is there, and then blue again on the bottom of the jersey. It looks so similar to Quickstep's.
It's shockingly similar. Even from up close, obviously you see the difference from up close, but like if you're like squinting a little bit, you wouldn't see which jersey it is. So that's how much it looks. And on the helicopter, you definitely won't see the difference. So I fully agree. This shouldn't be happening. Like a kit shouldn't be allowed to have the exact same shape and colors as Quickstep. Yes, it's denim. Yes, it's kind of jeans-like, but the differences are way too limited for... This is, first of all, bad for newer viewers or mainstream viewers to really... who's this guy riding for again? Oh, we've got Quickstep. No, it's Alpecin. Wait, are those the same team? Stuff like that. But it's also, for brand recognition, this can't be great for Alpecin, De Koninck, for Sol and Quickstep neither, eh? Like... everybody must be hurting.
That's what I mean. Surely, okay, you want to have... your goal is to... the sponsors have requirements of how their colours look, etc. I understand that, but... if no one knows where your team is or where your riders are or it doesn't stand out, isn't that a problem? Like, EF... yeah. You know where every EF rider is at all times. Visma's actually yellow. There's no other... solitary yellow kit. There's Intermarché, yep, though, sometimes you can see, and Visma are going to have to change in the Tour at least. I'm surprised these teams don't want to stand out more, because it all blends into one. Ineos Arkea, very, very similar. Like on the road, it looks really, really close. The Ineos shade now is much closer to Arkea's this year. I don't get it. I don't get why they... Like, surely they know what they're doing, Benji, when they make that kit Albertsen to Koenig.
Maybe it's on purpose. Maybe they thought, we've stolen their team format, which is having multiple sprinters and a classics team. That's the good old Quickstep format, as in like 5-6 years ago. Alpecin, the Koenig, is now doing that better. We've shown ourselves to be that team. Now they want to steal the actual cloning as well, and they want to actually immerse themselves in being that. But anyway, like, jokes aside, their bike looks absolute fire. Their kit I don't like. Cool. And the fact that it looks like Quickstep carbon copy paste of it, that's garbage. So sorry, but that's F tier. Are we rating it?
Yeah, I also don't know why it's released now, but maybe they just didn't.
Why is it denim? Such a gimmick.
You guys in Benelux love your denim jean shorts.
Fuck no.
Yeah, you do. Come on.
I don't. I don't even own denim.
I see denim a lot in Benelux.
The amount of times you're in Benelux, you went once.
You guys love the distressed denim.
Man came to Netherlands once.
I see it on TV 25 million hours a year. It's all I watch is crowds of people in the Benelux region. You have a million races. I've seen enough of Benelux, and I'll be there in a month. Okay. Otherwise, you could listen to the full interview, or if you speak French, or read the full interview if you want on Cyclisme Actu. They had a sit-down full interview with Nicolas Prudhomme, the decathlon writer, with with Christian Prudhomme, the effectively day-to-day boss of
ASO.
ASO. I know the video's automatically played, which I can't turn off, which is a very annoying part of the website. But basically, the gist of this interview, or what I got from it, was he just didn't seem fazed by the One Cycling project at all. It seemed to him to be like, it's another Hammer series, it's another breakaway league attempt, it won't work, they don't have their ducks in a row, we'll outlive this.
Yeah, and I feel like the other things I heard of, like I saw something about an interview with Milan Erdzin, for example, the Bahrain boss, and he was discussing the fact that that they might now be talking about all these big races like RVVN World Championships. We want some kind of three-day format, and one of them could be a time trial and stuff like that. And I'm like, dude, you're discussing the Hammer series again. It didn't work last time. It ain't going to work again. Like, no matter if you name... if it's a Flanders Classics race or not. And even, why would Flanders Classics want that in the first place? Change the format of their races. Like, the more I hear from it, from the more people involved, the more it seems like half the people don't even know what it's about.
I think ASO normally don't. That's why it's an interesting interview, having the big boss, the most senior person outside of the Amaury family, Christian Prudhomme, speaking about this. Normally, ASO don't really comment on ongoing things like this too much. They're pretty tight-lipped. They keep to themselves. And I think the fact that he's even speaking about it, to me, is almost like he just doesn't see it as a threat. Like, if he was like, this is a big thing, we might have to negotiate in the next couple of months or year with this, I feel like he would have said, I'm not commenting on about it. But to me, it seems like ASO is unfazed. Certainly, they're not involved. And so it's proceeding without them, if it is proceeding. But whatever idea there was maybe 2 months ago of like everyone around the table, ASO, RCS, Flanders Classics, all the teams, that certainly does not appear to be the case anymore.
And I feel like the initial conversation was, okay, we want the calendar where races don't overlap, where the top riders can be at every single race. And now the conversation seems to have changed towards... okay, now we're going to have like an extra racing league under the One Cycling banner, and that's going to be outside of Grand Tours, that riders can still use that to prepare for Grand Tours, and the One Cycling top riders will then use that and be there, and that's a completely different storyline already.
Yeah.
Like, major difference. So I'm curious what format it will land on, because that will 100% decide whether it's successful or not. Because the initial storyline, it being like a one cycling thing that basically is the new calendar, that's a thing. But if you then have like the other old calendar next to it with other races that aren't part of it, and then riders jump from the one cycling events to the others, then you've got Hammered Series again.
I know, yeah. And so stay tuned, but whether this sort of drops in 3-4 months as a big game changer, I'm not so sure. It doesn't sound like that at the moment, based on people that are speaking publicly about it. But yeah, go and read the transcript of that interview if you're interested in hearing more. Otherwise, there's a curious interview with Vlasov, I think in the Italian press, Benji. And this is, we've seen this with UAE, first with Almeida. Almeida said, it's not my job to decide how I race in the Tour, I'll race for myself. It's for the directors to figure it out, paraphrasing here. When people said, well, it's all in for Poggi, because they got Ayuso, Almeida, Yates, Poggi. Then you had Vlasov this week. He said, I'm not going in as a domestique. We go in as co-leaders, and then we see who's the strongest, with Roglic at Bora for the Tour. And then Kuss gave an initial interview where people asked him his ambitions, and he said, yeah, he'd like to go in and lead the Tour team as well. And I think he, in a subsequent interview, he backtracked a little bit and said, I didn't want to appear under-ambitious. I know that, you know, Vingegaard is the boss at the end of the day in the Tour, but still, three different teams, Benji, potentially with leadership quarrels.
Yes, but I think Visma is the one I'm least worried about. As in, Vingegaard's going to be all-out leader there, but I think they're always going to use Kuss as co-leader initially, if it's possible. It's worked before, they might as well try it again, until it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, they still have him as domestique anyway. So it's not like that will remove him from his domestique duties. He will be super domestique, co-leader, and if he sees an opportunity, they'll use him in GC in some shape or form. That's how I perceive that. And the man just won the Vuelta as well. He was better than all the other competition in that race outside of Visma. So he has the right to talk as well. He has the right to say, I want to be co-leader in some shape or form. I don't think he sees himself as, I'm on the same level as Vingegaard. I don't believe that phase. And that's also not the way he said it in my head. Then UAE, when it comes to Almeida and so forth, Pogacar, Ayuso and Yates, I've got no clue what's going to happen with UAE at the Tour de France. That's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is that we don't know. Because Pogacar's done the Giro, what shape will he come into the Tour de France for? We don't know that. Ayuso, Almeida and Yates, we know Yates has podium to Tour de France. He could be some kind of co-leader fashion. Is he better than Vingegaard? No, but it's going to be really cool to see all four of these leaders try and upset Vingegaard in some shape or form. So I think that could be a good vibe going on in that race. I reckon Almeida and Yates have got not necessarily the confidence in to really put pressure in that shape or form, but when it comes to Ayuso, he's kind of unpredictable in my head. Whereas if he can get to a higher level than he was last year, then I want to see him try some crazy stuff. I feel like he's got that ciclismo in him. When it comes to Bora, Roglic, main leader, the team has already said it, kind of. Hindley, I think he has a right to talk. I think he has a right to talk and say, I want to be a co-leader at the start. Vlasov, zero right to talk. When it comes to the Tour de France co-leadership, he's not shown anything to be able to say, I want to start off the Tour de France as co-leader, stuff like that. Hindley, full warranted. He can say that stuff. He was in the yellow jersey initially, then crashed and dropped out of top five, if I recall correctly. But Vlasov, nah. For Paris-Nice, he said in the same article something about Paris-Nice co-leadership. Sure, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. But a Tour de France? Fuck no, dude. Show it first.
The problem is both Hindley and Vlasov are out of contract. And so we saw this situation with Adam Yates in the Tour de France in 2022 at Ineos, where basically he didn't have a contract extension offer from them. And so he was like, I can't sacrifice my GC position for Thomas and then worsen my contract offers. And I think even G said, on what's the steep 2.7k 10% climb where Poggy did like 7 watts per kilo for 12 minutes and Vingegaard was in his wheel. Anyway, that steep climb, Yates helped G a little bit. And G was like, thanks. I was thankful to Adam because I know he's in a difficult spot with the contract. Hindley and Vlasov are both out of contract. They have to. First, Hindley, they should probably extend. He won the Giro. And
don't bring Vlasov.
Vlasov, why is he not doing the Giro? It's got TTKs and a really shallow start list.
Yep.
Makes no sense to me.
We agree.
They got Martinez doing the Giro. And it's like, Martinez and Vlasov co-leadership, that makes sense at the Giro. Because Martinez, you don't know what you're going to get with him in a Grand Tour. So
Vlasov, but I do want Martinez at the Tour de France instead of Vlasov then.
I think he is at the Tour, no?
Oh, okay. Well, if he does both, then that's fine. But I would have expected Martinez to be like a Domestique in the Tour de France for Roglic and Hindley as co-leader, to try and use Hindley as co-leader. But in let's be honest, in the team, they should know Roglic is the guy that is most likely to win the race. Hindley can be that co-leader in the same way that Kuss can be for Visma, to try and upset things, put pressure on the other teams.
Like he did on stage 5 last year. He got in a big breakaway, took the yellow jersey, won the stage. So he's proven exactly. He can do that. But yeah, their tour team, Hindley, Vlasov, Kemner, Roglic, Sobrero, Martinez. I would take Jungels instead of Vlasov.
Same.
Based on what I saw today, and send Vlasov as co-leader to the Giro, which suits him better anyway. And then you don't have those problems. And then if he podiums or wins the Giro, okay, extend him. If he doesn't, because he didn't have a good year, Vlasov, last year. He was better in 22. But yeah, certainly that was surprising to hear that. Well, no, actually, it wasn't. It wasn't surprising because I also understand it from Vlasov's perspective. Like, well, you're going to prepare at altitude. And I know you say, oh, be a good teammate. You're still under contract, but
yeah. I get it, but as a team, you just don't send him to the Tour de France then.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Whereas Hindley, I would expect before the Tour, a grudder of that quality, he's either extended there or signed somewhere else before July. That's what happens in 99% of the cases. The last bit of news was an article on Nasser Bouhanni. He gave an interview in L'Équipe. And basically said, it's a bit sad, to be honest, the interview. And listen, a lot of people don't like Bouhanni in the peloton or outside. Punching riders or dangerous moves in sprints. But just because a rider's done those sort of things or lashed out in a race, that doesn't mean that, you know, a really dangerous parkour that ends their career should just go by the by. And that's what happened essentially in the Tour of Turkey in 2022. He had a really heavy crash and like really badly injured his neck and back, I think, and basically ended his career. And he was psychologically damaged from that crash as well. He had a number of crashes in short succession. He had Merlier, I think, in one of your ChatGPT Belgian races. Maybe Merlier did a move and came back and just chopped the shit out of him and correct. Crashed him, I think. And
Monster 2022?
I think that's right. And
how the fuck do I know that?
Well, because I think we spoke about it at the time and we said, what if Nasser Bouhanni had done this to somebody else? Yeah. He probably would have been... Yeah.
Attacked on Twitter.
Attacked on Twitter, or it was Egmont or something. But yeah, he basically might have. The interesting thing, though, the really interesting nugget from this is he says he's commenced legal proceedings against the organizers of the Tour of Turkey. And I don't remember this happening too much, except for it was mooted with the Jakobsen crash in the Tour de Polonia. Yep. And I don't think it actually, Lefebvre got, he was like, we're going to do this, do that, I'll take him to court. Send this guy of Jumbo to prison. What do you say about what was his tweet? Lefebvre's tweet? Send this guy
send this guy to prison or something. Yeah. Or something like that.
It never really happened. And also, to get into the legal weeds a little bit, basically, from what I can see, Buani is had workers' disability insurance, or he had like permanent disability insurance, or some sort of insurance that if you get injured, and I know a lot of a fair few riders have this. All riders, in my opinion, should have this. I know it's expensive, but maybe he had it through the team because he was the French team, and they pay a huge amount to French teams for these sort of things.
Should teams provide this, or is that?
I think they should provide the option or like a recommendation that you should get this. I mean, agents should be doing this. Really, it should be the agent that should be sorting it out and making sure the rider has it, or at least saying, listen, you know, yeah, it's going to cost you 40 grand a year. It's a lot of money if you're on, you know, I'm not talking about Neo Pros here. I'm talking about guys like Buani who are probably on over 500K. But, yeah, it sounds like he's claiming under that insurance, and then the insurance probably want to go after the race organizer, because he says I could have raced for at least another 3 years, so he's probably claiming under his insurance or maybe he doesn't have the insurance, maybe he's claiming for his lost wages for those 3 years. And to be honest, that was a horrific crash, and it wasn't good enough the safety in that race, frankly. So. Oh, yeah,
it's also the specific scenario in which a crash happened was that there was a spectator, physically disabled spectator that walked onto the course or that stumbled onto the course in some shape or form. And I said in some shape or form so many times in this podcast, I'm sorry about that, but that caused the crash with Buhani. And I'm like, how can Buhani prove that that is the organizer's fault? Is it? Can an organizer prevent? Like, I fully agree, Tour of Turkey organizers, horrible the last 5 years when it comes to parkour safety. But how can we expect an organizer to keep every person off the road across 200 kilometers?
Yeah, it's impossible, really. So that's the thing, it's if an organizer has failed to comply with safe organization rules, be it the barriers, bend, road infrastructure, potholes, something like that, and then a rider crashes, I can really see, okay, they've breached a rule here.
Yeah.
They've breached their obligations for the safety of the riders. And I can see how he could, there's a legal argument there, but you're right. If someone just, the person just wandered onto the road, what can you do? I guess, should it be barriered off at that point? Was it supposed to be? I don't know. But certainly, there's been some issues with that race. But not just that race, other races. And I guess this is where like the Safe R initiative is supposed to like have another independent body looking at safety in the races. But to be honest, I don't know why the UCI doesn't, but again, the UCI can't stop someone wandering onto the course. That's just, you'd have to completely change cycling. You can't barrier off 200 kilometers.
Yep, I agree.
Otherwise, he also said, when he was referring to his years with Cofidis, that it was all or nothing at Cofidis, led by team boss Vasseur. I became the victim of psychological harassment there. It manifested itself in public humiliation and constant quarrels. It really made me hate cycling. So, yeah, just a really, really sad interview with Buhani, who, yeah, not everybody's favorite, but also seems like he had a pretty tough time of it, not just at the crash in Turkey, but from the last 8-10 years as well, given that this guy won, in 2014, like four Grand Tour stages, just about, or four or five between the Giro and the Vuelta, and then it's kind of went downhill from there when he joined Cofidis in 15. Any other news, Benji?
Ooh, I don't think so. I think I mainly wanted to talk about my training side for the March challenge we've got going on, the Flandrien challenge, and I got to be quickly because I've got about 9% of my battery left, so I'm getting worried. So my training this week sucked. Like, it's my fifth best week in the last 2 years when it comes to training hours, but it's not the amount of hours I wanted. And I felt like every single kilometer that I did during training today, this week, felt like an obstacle. It was one of those weeks where I think you look at, is it motivation? Is it fatigue? And I think it's more motivation than fatigue this time around, because before the rides, I feel like, ooh, I can take on the world. I get on my bike And I think it's because when I've got these weeks where I want to get a certain video out or two videos out or stuff like that, my mind is like, I want to spend my time on that and everything else is exhaustion. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I get the same thing. I kind of need, even though you say, oh, I've only got to train 2 hours, I've got plenty of other time to do stuff throughout the day. That's why in Australia it was good because I'd ride 4:30 to 6:30 and it's like you're in a fugue state. You don't even realize you're riding at that early in the morning, whereas here I waited a bit long. Well, at least you didn't crash, Benji. So yeah,
that's the benefit.
I'll show you off air what my hip situation is. So,
but not least, sure, yeah, I want to see that.
Maybe, yeah. LRCP OnlyFans. You get to see road rash.
People would pay and you know it.
No, that's messed up. All right, that seems like a good place to draw a bow on it. Regardless, I'll be doing my joint cycling program. I put in today a rest day, and there's also the readiness score that they've just brought out, and so that's pretty handy because my readiness to train, I can put that at zero for the next maybe couple of days. See how I go midweek. I think I'll be all right to get back into some zone 2 stuff then. But hope you enjoyed the podcast. As always, we'll be back with UAE Tour daily recaps, I believe, Benji, this week, if I'm not mistaken. So stay tuned for them, and then obviously opening weekend recaps next weekend. Thanks for listening. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.